Welcome to the Flash F1 podcast with Gil, Mark, and our special guest.
Welcome to the Flash F1 podcast. My name is Mark Hamilton. Not joining me today are either Gil or Steph, although I promise you we are cooking up an absolutely amazing episode for next week. But we do have a special guest, friend of the show and TSN racing analyst Tim Haraney will be joining us shortly. We're going to take a look at the season to date, talk a little bit about the progression of Lance Stroll and Nicholas Latifi, and you know what? Unfortunately, for those of you outside of North America, we're going to spend a couple minutes catching up on the NBA as well. Before we get to the interview, I wanted to ask all of our listeners for a little bit of help. First of all, we absolutely appreciate the feedback and we read all of it, good or bad. I think some of the best feedback that we've ever received is that which has been really critical of the show, whether it's too much music, the music's too loud, the intro's too long, the intro's too boring, you guys talk too much about Lewis Hamilton, you're far too biased, there isn't enough analysis. Like, the feedback's all good. And honestly, at the end of the day, if we weren't invested in making the show better, we wouldn't be listening to any of it. So we want it, we want it, we want it. What we would love, though, is if we could get a little bit more engagement on social media. And at the end of the day, for us, really all that means is following us on Twitter, following us on Instagram. Those are two dimensions of social media that we're working really hard to grow, and we'd love if all of you can be a part of that. So if you have a takeaway from today's podcast, if there's any homework, please track us down on Twitter, track us down on Instagram. We would love to be able to connect with you. And once you do, send us a DM. You know, we love to engage. We love voice notes. We love to reach out and we love to have conversations. And we also love to know what we could do better for everybody at home. So with that, we're going to have a quick break and then we're going to be right back with Mr. Tim Haraney of TSN.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
All right, listeners, as promised, joining us today once again is friend of the program, Tim Haraney. And I want to make clear something as well. I think oftentimes when we see folks that are on ESPN, TSN, or Sky Sports, oftentimes they're very much a talking head, and they may not actually have a pedigree when it comes to the sport that they're so actively involved in talking about. But Tim's really special because he has a very, very, very deep in rich history in motorsport. This is a guy that's competed in Champ Car Atlantic, Formula Renault, FIA GT Championship, 24 Hours of Daytona, the Canadian Formula Ford Series, and so many other series. He's ultimately been intimately involved with a number of OEMs, including Ferrari, Renault, Maserati, Porsche, McLaren, Audi, Ford, Nissan, BMW, Jaguar, Cadillac, and others. The guy is a fitness freak, and based on his social media, he's the only guy I know that runs as much as I do. He is very much, and I don't know if he's going to agree, but he's very much a Canadian national treasure, and I think most Canadian viewers in particular will know him because he is the on-air personality for TSN when it comes to Formula One and all things motorsports. And for those of you listening in the U.S., TSN is the Canadian equivalent of ESN, and they broadcast all of free practice, qualifying, and the races in Canada. Tim, with that, welcome to the program, as always, my friend.
I hope I can live up to that glowing introduction you just gave me.
It's well deserved, man. I think you're very, very special in media circles when it comes to that pedigree, and I think it really translates into some amazing analysis. How have you been? You know, the last time we kind of crossed paths was January. You were in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. We got together with Mark Daly of the Scuderia F1 podcast. We did a great show in the middle of a snowstorm, and then the world basically fell apart.
Yep, it most certainly did.
My goodness. So with that said, are you surprised that we're having a season? Are you impressed with what Chase and the Liberty team have been able to cobble together as a schedule?
Yeah, I am actually. I didn't really think that we were going to have an extended season like we're having. I honestly felt that the season itself was probably going to be like 8 races at best, and I felt that they were going to be most featured in and around European markets and things of that nature. And then they started talking about going to Abu Dhabi, and then they started to play with the idea of maybe Vietnam, maybe China. And then I thought, oh heck, if they're thinking about all of that, then you know, we might see some races here that, you know, we didn't think we were going to be able to have. That being said, you know, very impressed with the amount of work that went into all of this, just trying to put it together. I mean, the logistics alone to try and make this thing work are, it's a nightmare, but it also, at the end of the day, I think it just kind of shows you what is possible when you put your mind to things.
I don't know that most of our listeners are aware of this, but whenever Formula One brings a new race onto the calendar, that's not something that happens quickly. That's years of negotiation and managing logistics and all those kind of pieces. They're adding races to the calendar basically on the fly. It's been remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, now all of a sudden they're talking about going to Turkey. I never really thought that would even be in the cards to go to Turkey, to go to an event like that, where they last were, I believe it was either 2006 or 2008. I think the last time that they were there or something like that. And then the race just fell apart completely. Poor management, and just poor promotion and all of it. But now to see that they are actually considering going back and doing a race like that, which kind of looks like it's going to happen, it's pretty awesome. I mean, in a lot of the tracks that they're going to this season, like, whoever thought they'd be going back to Mugello? Even going back to Imola, like, whoever thought they would go back to Imola? I certainly did not. And I never thought that we would actually see them go to Mugello.
It's crazy. And if you flash back 5 months to the fact that at one point Italy was very much the COVID epicenter, and now we're in a position where we're going to see three races. We're going to Mugello, we're going to Imola, we're going to be at Monza. Like, this is incredible. So regardless of what's maybe happening on the track from a competitiveness perspective, just these new tracks and the dynamic that introduces, it introduces this incredible dimension of excitement to the sport, right? Like, and so far, all we've seen are the traditional tracks. We've been in Austria for a couple of races. We've been to Silverstone. Now we're getting to that point where we're getting closer to seeing some of these crazy tracks that we've not seen or we haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, and it's totally awesome too. I mean, if you think about it, just how fast these cars are going, and we go back to talking about how a lot of these new racetracks that are coming online, they're pretty safe. You know, you go off, you make a mistake as a driver, you're going to be okay. You're not going to crash the car. There won't be too much damage. Where in the past, you know, when I was racing, you make a mistake, you go off, you're going to pay for it. You're going to pay for that mistake. I think it's cool to see them kind of going back to these old school racetracks that are kind of like these dinosaur barbaric sort of tracks where you make a mistake, you go off, you're going to pay the price. And we haven't seen these types of tracks on an F1 calendar in an extremely long time. I mean, honestly, the only real, I would say, driver track is probably Suzuka, I would say. And it's kind of like, we're going to be seeing a lot more of these different types of tracks, and we're going to see what some of these drivers are made of when it comes time to it, because they make a mistake in Imola and, you know, you're going to go right off and you're going to crash the car. It's what's going to happen. And same with like a track like Mugello. And I just am really excited to see these legendary racetracks back on the calendar. And it also makes me sit here and think like, well, I wonder what 2021 might be.
Oh, 100%. 100%. It's interesting too, because, you know, all those points that you made are accurate in the sense that today's tracks are engineered for safety. They're engineered to satisfy all of these FIA regulations, but some of these tracks haven't been on the calendar. And as much, I think, as some people are disappointed or upset with the fact that it looks like Mercedes is going to run away with the driver's title and the constructor's title, the reality is, when we move into the second half of this calendar and we start hitting these tracks, like, these are places that Lewis has never raced, that Bottas has never raced. Like, it creates this sense of parity that is going to be new to the calendar, because it's going to be new to everybody, and you could potentially have some upsets. And to your point, like, it only takes one or two Lewis Hamilton mistakes, and he's not a guy that makes a lot of mistakes, but a little bit of bad luck and that driver's title could be up for grabs again so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point that you make. And some of the tracks that we're probably going to see is parity. Yeah. And I think that's exactly what we need right now.
Totally.
We need a lot of it, actually. This is the last couple of races. They haven't been the greatest, right? So,
totally.
You know, we could use a good shakeup, and hopefully some of these tracks are going to be able to do that. But at the end of the day, I mean, there is no question that Mercedes has built a race car that is unlike anything we have ever seen. And they also have the driver pairing to complement what they have in terms of that equipment. And you see all these other teams that are simply just not doing good enough, in my opinion. And they need to do better if they want to compete with the likes of Mercedes, because they're in a league of their own right now. And that's just the way it is. And I think going to these racetracks hopefully will spice some things up. I also think that if they can come up with a better tire solution, like they did with the F-170, I think we're going to see more of a shakeup, which is extremely important right now, because I think you have a ravenous fan base. I think there are a ton of new fans that are invested in Formula One right now. The ratings for it globally are through the roof. And you want to keep that momentum going, and you want to hold on to those fans, because you're going to have some fans that are coming online and they're going to be like, what am I watching? Like, there's no competition here. Like, there's no battling for first place. Like, what kind of a sport is this? And all these types of questions that are going to start coming, and they're going to start coming.
You know, you make a great point, and I'm one to defend Mercedes, and I don't fault Mercedes for their current run of dominance. Like, we talk about the fact that we moved into the current V6 turbo hybrid era in 2014. Like, these other teams, man, they've had 7 years to develop a car and develop a package, and we're 7 years deep into the new regulations, and Mercedes is arguably farther ahead than they've ever been. And I don't want to fault Mercedes, but that said, it's obviously not good for the sport. And you're right. Like, if you look at Instagram or if you look at Twitter right now, the volume of young fans that are joining the masses and becoming engaged is in huge. And part of that's because there's so many unbelievable young drivers, like the following that Alexander Albon's getting and that George Russell is getting and that Lando Norris is getting. This is great. They're bringing young viewers to the sport. But to your point, if we see another 2 or 3 years of Mercedes dominance, how soon until they drop off, because they've seen what we've been watching for the last 6 years?
Honestly, I don't even think it'll take that long. It'll take a couple months, not years. You know, the young fan base and the younger demographic, they don't wait around. They don't wait around, and they don't sit there, and they won't sit through something that is a procession, to say, like, so, something that's like, you know, follow the leader. It's just not going to happen. And to that, I mean, F1 is going to need to make some drastic changes. They're going to need to do it very soon and very quickly. So, I mean, it's not years. It's months. It's months of how long are these people going to last?
You know, and you're right. You can't have a race like the last one where the race winner laps everyone but the top three drivers. Like, you can't have that as a sport. You know, that said, I wanted to talk to you about Lance Stroll. So, all the parity issues aside, I think one of the things I really have to credit you with over the last couple of years is your unmitigated support of Lance Stroll. And this is a guy who obviously had a challenging 2018. And for me as a spectator, I really assigned a lot of that blame to the team he was a part of at the time, Williams. 2019 was a bit of a struggle, but this year he's exploding. And I was doing a little bit of analysis this morning, and I think one of the things that I find most remarkable about Lance is this is a guy that joined the sport in 2017. This is his fourth year in Formula One. Man, he's 21 years old. He's the second youngest driver in the sport.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, like I've always gone back to saying with a driver like Lance, is just the sheer talent. I mean, the guy has always had the natural ability. He's always had that natural talent. It's something I've always supported and I've always been behind. You know, no matter where he comes from, it comes from money or he doesn't come from money. The thing is that, you know, this guy has a ton of talent. You know, did he have the greatest of opportunities when he first landed in Formula One? No, not at all. He probably should have went through Formula Two. But what I always keep saying is when Formula One comes knocking, you have to answer the door and you have to do the best job that you can with the amount of knowledge and experience that you have at that current moment. I mean, I think one of the things that really set him back was just the understanding of the Pirelli tire and how it degrades and how aggressive you can be with it. It didn't really help that he was going into a team that was kind of on the downslide. You know, they were really struggling. Bringing Paddy Lowe onto the team probably wasn't the best idea. And they really set that team back a lot. And it set him back in his learning, because it's things like that that will shatter a driver's confidence. And at the end of the day, I think for Lance, moving from a team like Williams over to a team like Racing Point really breathe some fresh air into his confidence, because that was a team that noticed that, hey, yeah, you know, even though we're owned by his father, he has a tremendous amount of talent. We just need to bring it out of him. And that was one of those things that I was speaking with one of their technical directors, Andrew Green, who's a big part of making this race car go fast. He just said, you know, Lance has a ton of talent. The confidence might be a bit shaken because of where he's coming from, but we think that we can really bring this guy back, and we think that we can teach him some things that he doesn't even know yet. And sure enough, we're seeing it this season. We're seeing the fact that he's able to really manage his own race, really control his own race, and really control what happens with the tire. And I know a lot of people will probably get really bored of me sitting here talking about tires, but unfortunately, that's what we have to deal with in Formula One currently, are the, you know, is the tire. And that's what's giving a lot of drivers and a lot of teams difficulty, is just trying to figure out the tire, make sure the car can work with the tire. And that's basically it. That's a huge, huge part of F1 right now. And it's a huge part for Lance. And I think especially for his qualifying, that's something that we need to be really talking about right now. And we're not talking about this enough. And same with, you know, European, you know, news outlets and things of that nature. Like this is something that we really need to talk about, because at the moment he is one of the best qualifiers on the grid right now, aside from, like, obviously Lewis Hamilton. He's done a tremendous job in terms of getting to grips with that and getting to grips with learning how the tire works and then putting it to
you. You know, you made a great point, and I kind of wanted to jump back on this. But for a lot of our listeners, they may not be aware, but Lance won the F3 title in 2016. He dominated running that 2-liter Mercedes-powered Prima car. He won, I think, the last five races. He won the championship by probably 180 points. He was spectacular. And obviously, the next step in terms of his development and progression would be F2. And if you remember, 2017 was the year that Charles Leclerc won. Alex Albon was in F2 that year, but I don't think he had a strong year. But he had the opportunity, to your point, to go to Formula One. And you make that great point about adjusting to tires as well. Initially, a lot of the criticism of Lance was that he DNF'd his first three or four races. He didn't score points for his first six or seven. And he was really struggling to understand the tires. But that said, like, 2017 wasn't a disaster. It was a spectacular year. This was a year he got a podium in Baku, the last podium that Williams has seen. He qualified on the front row in Italy in the rain, immediately behind Lewis Hamilton. And I think one of the things that people forget is he finished only 3 points behind Felipe Massa in the driver's standings that year. He had 40 points to Massa's 43. And the other thing that, and maybe you can speak to this as well, is I don't know that Felipe Massa was exactly a mentor to Lance that year. Remember, like, it was expected that it was going to be Lance and it was going to be Bottas. And then Bottas is gone and they bring Massa back, and Massa's older. I don't know if he wants to be there. And I don't know if that kind of played into that year, but I don't think he was exactly a father figure or a mentor to Lance in that first year.
Yeah, things that I've read and I've heard, it really seemed like, you know, Felipe wasn't the most helpful to Lance when they were both together. I mean, at the end of the day, he is your teammate, and you always want to beat your teammate because, you know, they are sharing the same equipment as you do. That being said, Felipe is an unbelievable talent. So for Lance to learn from a guy like Felipe, I think you're going to do that through the data. And, you know, you can't hide that. I mean, the teams cannot hide that from the drivers, because the drivers need it, the teams need it, and they need it to make the car go faster. That being said, that was a year that I think we didn't focus on enough, because you have a 18-year-old coming into Formula One. He has set two records that we probably will not see broken in our lifetime. And that right there is huge.
Absolutely.
You know, for a Canadian too, right? I mean, pretty spectacular stuff, because Canadians don't have the strongest of track records in Formula One. There hasn't been a ton of us who have been able to even get into Formula One, right? So That being said, those are two massive records and they're owned by a Canadian now. So I think that's pretty cool.
I remember, and I think I probably shared this story before, but towards the end of 2016, I was at the Williams factory in Grove. And at that point, it was understood that Massa was leaving. And though he never won a championship and he never won a championship with Williams, they were being very celebratory of the fact that he was leaving. But no matter who you spoke to at the factory, they were communicating outwardly that it was going to be Stoffel Vandoorne that was going to join that team. And I think a lot of that was cover because it was probably understood that Lance was the right fit from a driver perspective and a financial perspective. But ultimately, if you look at the career arc of the two drivers, obviously Lance was the more talented driver and was the right fit. And ultimately, Williams wasn't necessarily the right fit for him. And there was an amazing opportunity when his dad was able to take advantage of the administration with Force India. But you look at his qualifying this year, and you know, you made that great point about the fact that, one, he's not only a great qualifier, but he's really, really great off of the lights. Last year, qualifying was a massive struggle for him, a really, really significant struggle. What has changed this year? Is it simply the car? Is it psychology? Has he done something different to improve his abilities? Because he's been in Q3 in every race but one.
Tires. I'm just going to say, I'll just leave it at that. No, I'm just kidding. I think learning the tire for him was, like I had said before, one of the key things for moving his career forward. Looking at qualifying, I think it's just how he prepped the tire in the past and then how he also used it. And then I also think it comes down to one of the big things that he's learned is the race qualifying setup and then using that to his advantage, or I guess adapting the driving style to properly utilize both. One of the interesting things that I noticed in the Spanish Grand Prix qualifying session was how he was using that tire in qualifying. I thought he did a really great job of not necessarily, I don't want to say conserving, but just taking care of the tire for the opening few sectors and then really leaning on the tire coming to the finish of his qualifying lap. You can see that some of the drivers who use the tire a little bit more off of the start of their quali laps, they were degrading faster and they were losing time in that final sector. So for Lance, you know, that's something that like Lewis Hamilton does really well. It's managing the tire for the first portion of the lap and then really leaning on what is left towards the end of the lap. And I felt that that's something that I've never seen Lance do before. And I saw it at the Spanish Grand Prix and I thought that that was absolutely brilliant.
That's amazing. One of the other things I think is a real strength of Lance, especially, and again, I go back to his age, right? Like I always think this guy's 4 years deep. He's 23, 24, 25 years old. The kid's 21, right? And if you look at the other young drivers, like Max is 22, Charles is 22, Albon is surprisingly 24, Norris is the younger driver at 20, Ocon 23, Gasly 24, Latifi 25, and Russell 22. Like he's really young, but he doesn't seem to make mistakes on track. And if you look at 2018, there was only two retirements. 2019, there was only two retirements. There was that contact that he had with Vettel in Italy last year, but that was obviously Vettel's fault. Like he just doesn't seem to make mistakes on the track. And I think one of the real strengths that he had last year was, despite the fact that there was challenges in qualifying, he was always a great starter and he could make up places right at the lights. This year, he's continued to make up those great starts like he did in the most recent race, but he's also qualifying. So he's qualifying towards the pack. For you, like what is the potential upside for this? And again, we don't know how that car is going to develop. We don't know what it's going to look like next year as Aston Martin Racing, but this kid seems to have, based on everything we've got seen so far, as much potential as any of those other young drivers that I've mentioned. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and a big part of it starts with the racing, you know, right, Mark? I mean, we've seen that he's absolutely incredible in the races, great at managing, great at overtaking, great at battling. The wheel-to-wheel battles with other drivers, he's quite remarkable at that. I mean, looking at what he did with Valtteri Bottas at the Spanish Grand Prix, heading down to turn one, it was basically leaving it up to Valtteri whether or not they were going to have an accident. And that's just, that's very aggressive driving. And I absolutely am here for it. So you know, I want to see more of that. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, we go back to looking at a racing driver and what are they good at and what can they always do better with. And as a racing driver, you always want to make sure you're working at your weaknesses, because those are the things that are, and they're going to make or break you. I mean, you have to be a well-rounded racing driver to stay in Formula One. You can get by on a couple years of just skimming by, but if you're not well-rounded, you're never going to last, because you need to have that engineering side of things done. You need to be able to have that ability to change your driving style when it's called upon. And that's what I keep trying to come back to with the tires, is that the tires change, you need to change with the tire, and you need to change the driving with the tire, because it's evolving as you're progressing throughout a lap and also a race. So you need to make sure that you're adapting to that. A racing driver like Lance, I mean, very good at it, obviously, clearly in the race, especially this season. He's been absolutely remarkable. Another portion of Lance that I've seen him work on and do better at is working with the engineers and dialing in dialing in the car to the way he needs it. And I think when he was first beginning his career in Formula One, really adjust the car to help him actually get the most out of it was something that he probably needed to improve on. And I think that's another one of those things that he has done, is just really fine tuning that technical ability to actually explain to the engineers, hey, I could use a little bit more front wing in this corner, or hey, maybe we should go down on the bar just a little bit so I can get a little bit more mechanical grip out of the cars through this chicane, et cetera, et cetera. So those are some of the things I think that he's really gotten strong at. And it goes back to what I was saying before, where it's like, it's working on those weaknesses to make yourself a well-rounded racing driver.
We may both have been particularly sensitive to this. One, because we're Canadians and we want to see a Canadian be successful in the sport. But
yeah,
the media has been, especially the European media, has been devastatingly harsh to this kid over the last 3 or 4 years. And the funny thing, man, now, the funny thing is, the tide seems to be turning. Like, if you look at a lot of this European press right now, it's like, he's got the right car, his talent shining through, it was always there. I'm like, where were these articles and these stories in 2017 and 18 and 19? And it's funny, too, because even if you go into the depths of Reddit and Twitter right now, it's the exact same thing. Like, there's this huge, like, pro-Lance movement that never existed before. But you can probably comment on this better than anyone. Like, you can have all the money in the world, and maybe it helps kind of guide your development, and it gives you some opportunities and your transportation and your travel are a little bit easier because you're not depending on a family with $100,000 kind of annual income. So that it may have helped his development, but the reality is, if you can't drive a Formula One car, it doesn't matter how much money you have. Like, maybe talk to the listeners about how difficult it is to drive one of these cars. No normal human being can get in an F1 car and finish a lap. If he wasn't qualified and he wasn't capable of driving this car, he would have washed out in year one. And here we are in year four, and he's fifth in the driver standings.
As a racing driver, one of the things that, you know, you need to focus on is obviously the driving. Everything that goes on outside of you is literally outside of your control, and that's something that you learn when you're younger and you're coming up through the racing ladder system, and you start to get more involved with doing interviews with the press and things of that nature. The only thing you can really control is what you do on the racetrack. You can't control people's opinions, and you can't control what people are going to say about you. And I think when you learn that as a young racing driver, it doesn't really affect you that much when you get into Formula One. I also think that some racing drivers who, I don't know, maybe don't really think about those things, it kind of can get to you a little bit. But I think you have to have a very positive outlook on things, and, you know, having that positivity that things will turn around for you. Things will come to you. People will say nice things about you, and people will say bad things about you. But the main thing that you need to have is control of yourself and control of what you do on the racetrack. Because you're only as good as your last race. And that's a saying that all of us drivers have learned over our careers is, you know, you're only as good as your last race. So you always have to do the best you can with what you got. And I think to be a Formula One driver, you have to be so well-rounded. You have to have that mental toughness big time, because we've seen just how harsh the media can be at times. And if you don't have that mental toughness, you know, I think the sport can really eat you alive. And also making sure that you've got a strong support system around you is extremely important in being an F1 driver. If you don't have that support system, who you can lean on, who you can trust, who you can provide to provide you with positive feedback and not bring you down with the negativity, then that definitely helps. Now, to drive the race cars themselves, it takes years and years of learning, because you come up through all these ranks. That's why they have the ladder system, because you're always learning something new as the cars go faster and the speeds become higher and the cars become a lot more temperamental, and they require you to really engineer it, and they require you to focus on what's going to help you go fast. What do you need from the engineers, the team, and the car to make it go quickly? Because one of the hardest things you can do is be put in a race car that's very difficult to drive and make it go fast. And if you are able to have that sort of natural ability that, you know, not a ton of us have. I mean, we have natural ability in certain areas and certain aspects of racing, but a guy like Lewis Hamilton, I think he's a generational driver that we are witnessing. And that's why I think we need to really appreciate what he does on the track and off the track as well, because he's just one of those drivers who can take something that's just not handling very well and he can still make it go fast. And that's one of his natural abilities. And I know I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here and I'm trying not to, but at the end of the day, it's like, there is so much that goes into driving these race cars. It's absolutely incredible. And the amount of work that these drivers have to do to be completely focused and live in the moment when it's called upon them is not an easy thing. It's one of the hardest sports, in my opinion, that's out there.
And on top of that, too, you think about, really, it's the pinnacle of sports, especially in Western Europe, and there's only 20 drives, right? Like, if you talk about the Premiership, if you talk about the NBA, there's hundreds of opportunities every single year. In Formula One, there are 20 seats. And the most incredible thing right now is two of them, 10% of them, are occupied by Canadian drivers, which is just phenomenal. You, and again, being respectful of your time, last question, I promise, but I think you've been very, very, very good at kind of integrating with drivers and building relationships, and I think they respect you, but you've also been able to build a really good relationship with Lance and with Nicholas Latifi with the Williams team. I think one of the things we're lucky about is both of them are great talents. And I think Lance is really showing that he's an exceptional talent because he now has the package and everything's coming together. But both of them, from a personality perspective, are just phenomenal young guys. And you see how much fun Nicholas has with his teammate and on social media. Are these guys as fun to be around in real life as they seem to be through social media?
Yeah, these guys are, they're really good. I mean, they're down to earth. They have a great sense of humor, and you know, I wish that we could see more
Me
of Lance's, because
he's
a pretty funny guy, man. And as for Nicholas, you know, we see I think that's one of the things that Nicholas does so well, is just he's so free flowing and he's so great with his personality, and he's very open to people, and what you see is what you get. And I think in this day and age for athletes, it's hard to do that. You know, it's really hard to kind of just be yourself. And for Nicholas, he does that so well. And you know, I really respect that a lot. And these two young drivers that we have who are representing our country are, they're great personalities. They are really good guys. They work hard at their craft. Let me tell you, like, they, both of them, have sacrificed a lot to be where they are. I mean, really have. And the amount of work and effort that they put into their craft is very respectable. I mean, I've seen both of their training plans before, and absolutely incredible how they're able to keep up with everything and still go out onto the racetrack and do what they need to do to get the job done. And extremely tough competitors. And I think two of the more aggressive drivers on the track as well. I've seen, you know, Nicholas on the racetrack plenty of times. I've seen Lance on the racetrack plenty of times. And sometimes I've had to be like, whoa, they just did that. It's like, they just went flat out through there on the second lap. And it's kind of just like, whoo. I'm like, I don't know. That might take me a couple laps to build into it. You know what I mean? So extremely, extremely aggressive in that respect, which is amazing. But yeah, no, these are great guys. I've had a fun ride for sure covering them. That's for sure.
Nicholas is in a unique position. Obviously, he's a 25-year-old rookie. He had some success coming through the developmental ranks, the ladder, as you said. He's in a tough position with that Williams team, and obviously, I think they've shown some signs of improvement this year. If you could offer some wisdom or advice to him this year, like, what are a couple of the things within the constraints of that team? What are a couple of things that he could do this year to work on his craft, given the limitations of that team and that package?
I think one of the things with Nicholas is that he's on a team that he can really learn a lot from. He's got a lot of experience behind him. He's got a lot of really great engineers that are teaching him a lot. He's got a great attitude towards all of it. And I think for a racing driver, you need to have that attitude to learn and to grow. And at the same time, he's got a lightning fast teammate, man. I mean, George is no joke. Totally. Like, that guy is totally incredible. And to see how close Nicholas is to him right out of the garage is, to me, that's impressive. Like, Nicholas has had some very strong teammates over his career. And I think George is like one of the strongest ones he's ever had. And, you know, he gets him in Formula One. In all honesty, my thoughts were, and I said this on SportsCenter, you know, when we first started off on this was, hey, you know, don't be surprised if you see Nicholas kind of struggle for the pace in the first five to six races. And then, like, we get the race two and he's like he's probably going to out-qualify him in qualifying if he doesn't get messed up on his quali lap in the rain there in Hungary. He would have out-qualified George for sure. I mean, 100%. He was so quick that day. And I mean, I didn't expect Nicholas to be this close to George straight off the hop as he is. And I think that's just a testament to his work ethic and talent, because a lot of people don't really know that, you know, Nicholas was actually during the Hungarian Grand Prix, those 2 weeks that we had there, he was spending a lot of time at the racetrack when the races were finished. So the next day he was coming back and he was working with engineers to learn as much information as he could, so he could be ready for the next weekend. And it's kind of like a basketball player who has that raw talent, but needs to work on some other fundamental issues to really dig into all of the talent that they have. Like, you see a basketball player, like, I don't know, like Fred VanVleet. I mean, let's take a look at him first. I don't want to sit here and compare the sports or anything, but it's kind of one of those things where you work at your craft, you just dig up so much gold. And I think for Nicholas, having that strong, strong work ethic, which he has, is only going to do him favors. And I think we're seeing that. I mean, I think the British Grand Prix weekend, Silverstone, and maybe the Spanish Grand Prix were the only weekends where I really thought he kind of had it tough. And that I think he kind of either went a wrong way with setup on the race car, or, you know, just made a few little mistakes here and there. But at the end of the day, for a rookie, I think he's done an absolutely awesome job. And to be in the shoes that he's in with a car that is not the most competitive, but, and have a teammate that is as competitive as George is, I really think he's I really think he's doing a great job.
And this is a guy that's guaranteed next year. So we know it's going to be, we know what the driver pairing is going to be there next year. And I think George was maybe hoping to have a whiff at a different seat next year. Unfortunately for him, he'll be back for Williams. And I think that's a good thing for that team. And I think that's, I think it's a good thing for Nicholas too, because he's got a teammate that he genuinely gets along with. Like, I remember during winter testing, there was all those photos of George Russell with his shirt off. And then you've got this photo of Nicholas walking around in the background, holding a big sign that says, keep your shirt on. Like, there's obviously a good relationship there. And I think that's awesome to see. And I think also for Nicholas is like, because it's a team with a car that's not as capable as the rest of the field, I think there's a little less pressure than there might be in other situations. So we know he's going to be there this year. The pressure's off. We know he's going to be there next year. So he's got a little bit of runway. And I think that's amazing. Last thought, because you brought up Fred Van Fleet, the NBA bubble has been an unmitigated success. It has been amazing. And watching NBA playoff games at 10:30 in the morning on a Wednesday is something I never thought I would be doing in August.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I was saying to my girlfriend there a couple nights ago, we were over at a buddy of mine. We were over at his house watching the game in his backyard. And you could tell when they were cutting the audio of the players, because you could hear like the loud screw. And then all of a sudden the audio goes dead. And I was saying to my buddy, I'm like, I absolutely love like this bubble NBA playoffs that we're seeing, and give it to me anytime. And I also said, and this is for the NBA, if they ever listen to this, I would pay a subscription a month just so I could hear the on-court audio with the game. I would pay for that. I really would. And then you could like leave it open to like people, you know, you got to be 18 plus to sign up for this and watch it.
Yeah, it's just a feature in the app. You turn it on and you get the uncut player vocals. Yeah, I totally agree.
Absolutely.
I've loved every second of it. And it seems like right now, more than ever, like the Lakers lost a game, the Clippers have lost a game, the Bucks have lost the game. More than ever, the title seems wide open at this point.
Oh, dude, I wouldn't be surprised if like the Portland Trailblazers are in the Western Conference Finals, man. Like, absolute. Damian Lillard's been, you know, lights out. That guy has been awesome. And to see what they've been like, they literally dismantled the Lakers the other night. Like, I'm excited to watch the game tonight to see what happens again. I mean, I think like Anthony Davis, like AD just doesn't look interested. And LeBron, like, I don't want to say he looks injured, but he doesn't look like LeBron right now, you know? And it's like maybe one of those things where I think he's going to have to come out and really set the tone. And I think he's really going to have to get one of those games where he just absolutely wastes himself on the floor just so 100%. He can get a win. And I don't think like a guy like LeBron can go through an entire playoff run like that. Especially, you know, given his age right now, right? I mean, I think it's kind of going to be one of those things where it's like, hey, I gotta conserve energy here and there, but he doesn't really have the bench.
You're 17 for this guy. Right? And the challenge was, this is the worst possible matchup for them in the first round. Because if you look at the Raptors and you look at the Bucks, like, they have reasonably easy matchups, right? And I think the Lakers, you look at the age of LeBron in his 17th season, you're hoping that, hey, you know what, you have an easy four-game sweep, you get a little bit of rest, because every game they lose just compounds how much work he's having to do. And I don't know if you saw this, but it looks like the NBA's talked to their TV partners, and they're actually going to compress the second and third rounds to get the finals sooner.
I was just thinking that I was just going to get to what you're saying right now. Because you're not going to have that time to take off to rest, right? So you have to kind of like get into these series and you need to get them over as fast as possible. So you can kind of get that 2 or 3 days worth of rest, where in the past, you know, heading into the Eastern Conference Finals, they would get 3 to 4 days, maybe 5 sort of rest and practice to get yourself. But now that's not even going to exist. It's not going to exist. So I think for these players, like, if that does end up happening, that you're going to need to be on it every single quarter of every single game, so you can kind of get those days of rest that you're going
to
need.
So to all of our listeners outside of the United States and Canada, I apologize for NBA talk with Mark and Tim, but for those of you listening in North America, I know the NBA is absolutely booming right now, and I think the NBA bubble is all most people are talking about. So hopefully you enjoyed a little bit of NBA analysis. Tim, I can't thank you enough once again for coming on the show. I think this is your third or fourth appearance in the last year and a half. It's amazing. Yeah. We appreciate your time. You're doing a fantastic job. COVID aside, your analysis that you're able to deliver, the work that you're doing with TSN, it's all fantastic. And really, as kind of the television ambassador for motorsports in Canada, we couldn't have a better person out there. And like I said, you're very much a national treasure. So keep doing what you're doing.
Definitely not a national treasure, man. But really appreciate you having me on, Mark, and appreciate all the nice things you're saying there. You know, means a lot. I just try and work as hard as I can at this to try and bring the fans closer to the sport, you know, and especially the Canadian fans. I think we have two young Canadian drivers who are a lot of fun to watch, and they have great personalities, and you have a Canadian-owned team, and it's a great time to be a racing fan, you know, and just kind of want to share my passion for the sport and all my years of knowledge with everybody so they can get, you know, more invested in it. And I just love sharing it with the fans. You know, I absolutely love it. Cool. It's incredible.
We appreciate your time. Good luck. Enjoy the rest of the season, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks again, Mark. Appreciate you having me on.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
Before we sign off today, I want to make sure to remind all of our listeners to check out our official sponsor, DavidTiresArt.com. David, T-Y-E-R-S, art.com. David is a Canadian-based artist originally from the UK who specializes in acrylic prints of Formula One cars and MotoGP action. If you haven't checked out his work, I highly, highly recommend it. It is an awesome piece of art to hang in a den, in a living room, in your garage, your man cave. It's great to buy for yourself as a present. It's even better as a gift for a loved one, but I highly recommend you check it out. And like I said, the guy's based in Canada. He's based in Vancouver. He prints and ships globally. The artwork is very, very cool. And I don't know if you noticed, but he actually got a bit of a shout out from the official McLaren Twitter account a couple of weeks ago, which I think was very, very special to him. And it's really just a reflection of the phenomenal work that he's doing. So again, check it out, DavidTiresArt.com, the official sponsor of the Flash F1 podcast. All right, guys, that's all we've got. Like I said, we have a group chat edition of the Flash F1 podcast coming up next week. Steph's going to be back. Gil's going to be back. We have a ton of stuff to cover, not least of which, of course, is the Spanish Grand Prix. Maybe not the most exciting race, but there's a ton of stuff going on in the world of Formula One, and we want to make sure that we get everybody caught up. So with that, I'm going to sign off. We'll speak to you soon. Peace.